I'm going to talk about masculinity today, Toby. So what better person to bring on? Genuinely, I know he's trying not to laugh and smile, but being serious, someone who's a Royal Marine, trained very, very hard. I bet, and you couldn't tell from the tattoo you have on your arm as well that says Royal Marine Commander.
Did you notice that?
Yeah. But I want to talk about masculinity today, something that is close to me. And I think the world has lost a bit of recently as well. We've had a strange movement that anything masculine is considered bad, anything feminine is considered good. And I think a lot of people are very, very confused about the place in a man, going through a sort of, it's the word for it, epidemic of male suicide being going through the roof. 80% of suicides are men. And before I just start talking about yourself, I think we're actually going to talk about that. I think that why do you think male suicide is going through the roof, Toby? What's your thoughts on this?
I think there's more pressure than ever on men to be a certain way. You know, I know men who, they're tall, good looking, they're in good shape, and they earn average money, yet they still feel like the need to, they have to be one of the top earners as well. So anything they do, they have to kind of post any like small flex about money as well, because, and I don't judge them for doing it, because especially here, like in Dubai, again, like I said, you've got to be tall, good looking, have a six pack, be successful, be financially stable,
and I'm then looking at him right here. Then, wait, what's your number?
And then also have free time to spend with a woman or something like that. So I think men are not getting appreciated enough for, you know, going out, grinding, having an okay job that you can support a woman and support a child with, and being in good shape, going to the gym or doing a sport, martial art, three, four times a week. Like that, I feel is lost. No one really appreciates that as much. I think there's a lot more pressure on men than ever to tick seven or eight out of 10 boxes, mm-hmm. when in reality you can't, like who actually ticks 10 out of 10 boxes? Very, very small amount of people that do
and,
it.
So. And those who do still have a hard time. I think it's interesting that also the people, like, look, be honest, you do tick those boxes. A lot of people that I know are successful financially, in shape, etc., all those things you said, question themselves the most. Actually, a lot of men I know that, well, be very blunt, I'm not friends with them, but guys I know that don't tick in those boxes, they're the most delusionally arrogant. It's the Dunning-Kruger effect. So the more competent you become, or the more competent you are, the way to describe it, I'm not putting this in the correct words, but you basically, the more competent you are, the more insecure you are, because you realize what you don't know. So as you say, someone starts jiu-jitsu, when you first start, you think you're really good. Then the more you know, you realize, shit, I know nothing.
Well, you recognize your weak areas, right?
Yeah.
You recognize
your flaws don't.
A lot more. And it's like, again, you go, everyone thinks they're really tough until you go to a martial arts class.
Spot on.
Or do some sparring, whether it be boxing, kickboxing, Muay Thai, jiu-jitsu. And then you're like, actually, I don't want to get in a street fight. Do you know, like, I'm actually not that fucking tough.
No, I'm not that tough.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
You're delusional. So Mike, when did you start jiu-jitsu? How long ago was it now?
Well, that was a while ago now. I think actually jiu-jitsu.
How old are you, Michael?
I'm 41. I don't know why I looked at the camera for
that's beautiful.
yeah, I think it was about 15 years ago now. And it's funny that you mentioned that about kind of the more you know, the more you realize you don't know. I was chatting to some lads the other day in Belfast that was on another podcast, and they were talking about being a black belt and doing jiu-jitsu and things, and what does it feel like to be, you know, they were saying, what's it feel like to, like, it's odds on that you're the toughest guy in this pub, right? I said, well, don't really think of it like that, because when you're a black belt like yourself, we end up training with other really high-level guys. Like when you get to a high level of, you know, competence in sports or whatever it is, you train at that level, so you know the monsters that are out there, right? So
you don't deluded, feel you that realize, yeah,
exactly realize. Yeah, so
yeah, I think people start to realize what's out there. I think that the biggest thing that happened, you can either go, actually I'm gonna try harder or find a coach, or you can pretend it never happened and go, actually I don't want to be in shape. Yep. To protect your ego.
Massively off on a tangent there, weren't we?
That's the way.
Like, how do we get here?
I know. We're in a podcast, dude. Where even are we? Yeah. Another question for you, actually, is talking about the impact on men, the pressures on men. So I think we're talking about this a minute ago, but where women, what they want, where they say, I want a guy with a six pack, 6 foot, earns 100 grand. And the important thing here is, guys, that is 0.1% of the population. 0.1, one in 1,000. And how many percent of women would you say want that? I'd say 50%. So you look at a woman that's 5 out of 10 in the center, who probably is a bit overweight, is going to be overweight if he's in the middle, right? Who doesn't provide anything else for the guy, but then will ask for that kind of guy. And I think the reason for men, we put a lot of pressure on each other or on ourselves that we want to improve ourselves. So if we think we're not adequate, we try and improve ourselves. Well, I think a lot of women I talk to say this as well, instead of actually improving themselves, they go, just love yourself. Well, just loving yourself is just deluding yourself, right? If you're actually not at the standard you want to be, do something about it. And you're an exact example of that. And the next thing is I'm gonna ask you about your training. So why do you train the way you do? What does training mean to you? Why do you train the way you do, Toby?
Yeah, so for me, training has always been an obsession, I think. And I've done all sorts of training. Like, people look at me in the last few years and just think I'm a bodybuilder. But before bodybuilding, I was always, like, I grew up doing boxing, rugby. Obviously, then I joined the Commandos for 5 years, which didn't really do an awful lot of weights until, you know, my last couple of years in there. Training for me, it's who you say you are, and it's proving who you are each day to yourself. Everybody can, like, I was watching UFC this morning, and you're watching someone and I would do this, I would do that, right? And you always get it. People always, but
our favorite.
And people sit there and watching the Olympics, and you don't realize how, like, top level these people are. You don't necessarily appreciate, like, the marathon race. Try to run that pace for a minute. Probably, like, most people can't do it, right? So people can sit there and they again, like you said earlier, like, deluded. For me, about training is, if you say you're a fit person, you say you're a strong person, you say you're mentally tough.
For the numbers out there.
You need to prove it to yourself every single day. So I can sit there, you know, in the evening, and I'm sure that, yeah, today I push myself hard. Today I am that person that says who I am. Like, I preach to online about mindset and stuff like that. I can't preach about mindset and sit there and not do it. I started when I changed over from bodybuilding into doing more like conditioning and fitness work. I started doing like ultimate athlete programs and sort of telling people, look, you can be big and you can run, you can row, you can ski, you can still do all of this kind of stuff. It's just a little bit more difficult, but you can do it. So I went and then I ran 160K, right? I ran 100 miles.
Well, I remember at 5K, you said your knee was hurting.
Yeah, in 5K, my knee. And I was like, I put on Instagram now. Like, I'm not going to.
My ego is going to be ruined. I have to finish.
So the reason I did that was because how can I then tell people, like, you can run 10K, you can run 50K as a big guy? I had to put myself to the extreme to say, I'm not saying you've got to go out and run 160K, but you can run 100K. Sorry, you can run 10K.
We're going to start with 100K.
You can run 100K. Oh, you can run 10K. You know, how is someone going to respect me for sitting there and talking about mindset and talking about pushing yourself through it all if I've not done it to the extreme myself?
People will be able to see straight through it. I think it comes from a place that you genuinely do it yourself. People can tell. Yeah. Sorry to interrupt you, but this is something we talk about a lot. We bitch about on Instagram to each other and DMs. But no, a lot of people, and we talk about this a lot as well, where people will talk about mindset, talk about weight loss, but they're not doing it themselves. But actually, funny enough, a lot of these people on Instagram, I won't name any names, but we all know they are. Well, they'll talk about losing weight, getting into shape, and they're a mess themselves.
Yeah.
And, you know, people say, can you be a fat PT? And I'd say, I don't care, because absolutely not. I know the usual phrase is overused, right, guys, where people go, you know, can you be a financial advisor and be dirt poor? No. Like, why in personal training or fitness is the only place you can be a mess? You don't have to be shredded, but you're a mess and be telling people how to be in shape.
How can you guide someone if you're not at least following the basic principles yourself? Again, you haven't got to be 4% body fat or 120 kilo like jacked, but you need to have a above average level of neck. Well, no, you need higher than above average.
Of course, it's your job.
You need absolutely. a great level of
average job. Level is very low, isn't it?
Yeah. Well, I actually was saying, go, that 5 out of 10 women is massively pretty very overweight, right? So it's average is about out of shape, right? So definitely not.
So yeah, so training for me is just about it's confirming who I believe I am and who I say I am. Not every session is like that. Sometimes I'll just go and do arms because I enjoy training arms. But the sessions where I push myself, it's all about proving each day, this is who I think I am. Okay, I've confirmed it. That's who I am. Otherwise, again, you live a lie, right? It's easy to think that, oh yeah, if that guy came in here, I would knock him out. Or yeah, I could run 100 miles if I wanted to. But
You haven't done that.
Yeah.
It's growing up, my mum used to say this. My mum is a dentist. My parents are both dentists. And she used to say, people say, I could have done it, but you haven't. So yeah. When it's, since a young age, you always used to say that to me, the people that say that could have been this, could have been a doctor, could have been an MMA fighter, could have done this, but they haven't done it. Nobody cares.
It was a
Nobody
big one. Cares. Like we used to joke about it in the Marines. You'd always meet a guy in a bar that says, oh, I was going to join the Marines, but my mum wanted me to go to college instead.
Like, we didn't. That's fine, but you didn't.
Yeah, right? No one cares. Like, I'm not going to respect you anymore. I'd respect you if you just told me that you did great in college. And
yeah, that's
that,
it.
You know?
So there's nothing wrong with that, exactly.
But yeah, it's always like, I could have done it. Yeah, I could have done it. But some of the fittest, toughest guys I know like blew their knees out and stuff. So you're like, it's... You can't just sit there and say, I would have done it until you've gone and done it. So.
Yeah. With the motivation thing, I think that people ask people like yourself, and I'm sure even, you know, with us as well, people ask Michael as well, how do you, with, you know, even with your education, being a black belt jiu-jitsu, people ask, are you always motivated before you train? Are you motivated every day to train? How do you stay motivated? Is motivation a myth?
Motivation is a myth, I believe. If
I think so too.
Why does anyone who's achieved any... thing, whether it be fitness or okay, just say fitness, and it's like an incredible achievement, it's because they want to do it. You have to want to do something. I don't believe I don't want to do it, but I'm gonna do it. Okay, that comes with discipline of like going to work a job you don't like to put food on the table for your family. The reason, like I've any sort of fitness thing I've done, it's not motivation, it's because I want to do it. If you like say you're looking at a guy on Instagram who's in incredible shape, you're never going to compete with this guy because he wakes up in the morning and he loves to go and train. If you wake up and you hate training, you hate it. No matter, you can watch as much motivational stuff as you want. You can listen to all the podcasts you want. You're never going to be able to achieve what that guy has achieved because he wakes up in the morning and loves it.
It becomes, but do you think that becomes with discipline? You eventually, there's something I speak about quite a lot, actually. So where someone will learn to love something because they get a dopamine hit from it because they're good at it, but it's taken time to get to that position. So like when you start jiu-jitsu, the reason I like jiu-jitsu, I'm a third dan black belt, so I'm relatively competent at it, so it makes me feel good. Same with you being fit, same with you being a black belt. You enjoy it because you're good at it, and it gives you, you know, gives you a hit of dopamine. You're like, oh, I feel good at this, I feel competent. Some days you don't, but you know what I mean? I think it takes time to get to that point. It takes time to take a lot of shit to get to that point where you go in and go, I actually enjoy this because I'm good at it, right?
Yeah. I think you need to keep your why. Your why always has to be very strong. Again, like when I stopped bodybuilding, I started trying to run again. Man, I do 5K, you know, my legs were pumped, my back was pumped. And it was like kind of, it was a very negative for me because I'm like, I used to run a lot, very, very well. But then I just kept the end result. I was like, okay, it might take me 2 months. It's been 2 years now since I started doing it, which doesn't seem, you know, that's quite a long time.
Very long time.
To get back into it. And now I'm finally like at the level I wanted to be at. But it took me 2 years to do it, but I kept it in my head. Okay, that's where I want to get to. And just kept chipping away and living through the small goals. Like, okay, I did 5K in 30 minutes. Okay, next time I did it in 5:28, but it felt a lot easier, just for example. Like you said, and then you get to the point where when you start progressing a lot, you then get the dopamine hit. And I think it's like you said, it's the discipline. You've got to have discipline to get you to that point. But motivation's a funny one because this, you know, for me it's all based off emotion and how I feel when I go to the gym. And I love training. Like when I'm competing in bodybuilding, even though I have no energy, I go and I'm like, I look shredded. I'm like, I love training when I'm shredded because I look in the mirror and I'm like, well, that's my hard work there. That's a representation of my hard work. So and then I get the reward from it. I think it's very difficult for people starting off because if you don't like how you look, it might take you 6 months to start liking how you look. So,
I mean, the question is I know for a fact, I'm sure you've had loads of sessions where you feel like you don't want to go, but I know I feel worse once I do go. Better when I do go. I think, because, it's not worse. God, this is that. No, you feel better when you go because if you promise yourself, this is a big thing I think you spoke about earlier. You're saying about when you promise yourself to do something, you can't cope the fact you let yourself down. Because if you let yourself down once, say you're going to do a 10 by 500 today, right? And you stop halfway. Or you say you're going to do 4 jiu-jitsu sessions this week, whatever it is, and you do 1 or 2. The fact is, if you gradually let this standard slip, it eats into every aspect of life. I've seen that in every aspect with people. So say it's in their business, their family life, their training. It's going to seep, whatever that thing they let slip, it seeps into everything. The low standards slip into absolutely everything.
Like I said, it's like the first time, like when you quit the first time, it's the hardest. And it's a lot easier to quit the second time, right? So like you said, if you don't promise yourself day in, day out, that I'm going to do this and I'm going to stick at it. Like you said, slowly it seeps into the rest of your life, and then you end up, like, you've got to hold yourself to a standard. Because if no one holds us to a standard anymore, I don't think.
No.
Just in general, anyway.
And nobody really cares.
No.
Because they've got their own stuff they're sorting anyway.
So if you don't hold yourself to a standard, no one's going to do it for you. It's not like school. It's not like, or even being in the military. Like, if you couldn't do X amount, you'd get a bollocking, and then all the lads would judge you like, well, why are we all fit as a unit and you can't do something?
I think there's something wrong with society nowadays, exactly what you just said there. So I think judgment to a certain extent is good. I don't think it's a bad thing. I think that people saying, like, why haven't you done that? It's a good thing. And now what happens is, if someone says, why aren't you doing this? Why are you putting on weight? Why are you, whatever it might be, whatever negative thing aspect you're doing in your life, then they'll just get upset about it and cry. And that's what I was saying about earlier. I was going to talk about the men being,
I was just going to say, like, why do people hire a personal trainer, right? To keep them accountable. So the whole act, like, the whole idea of a personal trainer is to keep you accountable. You don't then start criticizing your personal trainer for making you do 3 more reps. That's their job. But then,
because they care. If they care, they will help you.
But then, like, friends and family around you putting pressure on you to lose weight or try harder at studying or your business or anything. It's, people take that such a negative.
Because they love you. That someone who loves you will actually hold you to high standards.
Yeah, exactly.
They care about you. Someone that says it doesn't matter, doesn't love you. They're actually, most of the time, Toby, Mike, you've seen this on Instagram a lot. I talk to you, again, bitch, the DMs. I don't do that about everyone. I do. But anyway, what I talk about a lot is where people will, way to describe it is they'll go, oh, it's okay. Half their Instagram, they have the most followers, actually. I'm being serious. You've seen it on Instagram a lot. And actually, I'm going to mention someone. Actually, Ben Carpenter, his Instagram is all about body positivity. If someone being overweight or women in the gym is scary, get bullied. And then Ben Carpenter will be, it's okay to be fat, all this stuff, constantly. It's the same repeat pattern. And there's people saying, thank you, Ben, for making me feel better. I'm like, hang on a second. Why are you putting that out there? He's actually in very good shape, to be fair to Ben. Why are you putting that out there? So give you an idea. Is that loving someone? If you care about people, if someone's overweight, it does not make them a bad person. But if someone's very overweight, we're not talking about corporate fat. We're talking about very, very overweight. That person is in pain. If you love someone, someone's close to you, they're putting loads and loads of weight on. Say, I don't know what it might be, a sister, your wife, or, you know, mum or dad, and they're getting massive. You generally sit them down. You have to be horrible to them and go, like, you know, you're putting on a lot of weight. What's going on? And I think the question is not you're eating too much, because that is actually the wrong way to ask them. It's like, what's going on? Are you okay? What's happening?
It's because it's a visual thing, right? Because you can see someone's putting on weight. If somebody was drinking vodka every night, but because it's a very visual side effect, it's like, oh, you have to tiptoe around the fact, because, oh, this is my body. It's not like going up to someone saying, oh, you've got a big nose, right? They can't help that. But putting on excessive amounts of weight.
It's not your fault, but it's your responsibility.
Yeah, like you can control your weight. And if someone around you who cares about you is bringing that up, or even a PT online is saying about, you know, it's actually bad to be fat, it shouldn't be like, that person shouldn't be slandered. There's certain ways of going around it.
Of course, this is the thing. It's really horrible. People go, because I do sit a lot in gyms, right? We've seen it before. People that are in shape, belittling people who are out of shape. And no, that's not the right way. And I don't mean that they're trying to sound like a nice guy. Generally, if someone's really overweight, it genuinely upsets me. Actually, I look at them and go, that person's a lot of pain.
Someone is
really, really overweight. I'm not talking about your mate who put on a couple of kilos. Someone that's put a lot of weight on is very, very overweight. There's a lot of pain. And I've actually felt sorry for them. Something really jarring to me. My dad told me, you know, obviously what's going on in the UK, we all know about while we're here, the massive cost of living, housing is expensive, comparative salary. So a lot of people are struggling. And I said, you know, to my dad, I said, I do relatively well. And, you know, I'm in shape, et cetera. A lot of things are positive about my life. I don't get how people cope. And he goes, well, they're not. And I said, well, what do you mean they're not? And he goes, everyone's overweight. They're massively obese. They're not okay. Like you just said there, Toby, they're not coping. It comes out in eating. One of the questions I got asked a lot, and I was going to ask you what your thoughts were. So, and I'll ask you, we'll do it all separate actually. Mm-hmm. What do you think, it's okay for men to cry?
Yes. The physical act of crying, I think, is what, obviously, when you get to a certain point of emotion, you can't handle it. It's an overspill of emotion, right? I do think it's okay for men to cry. Everyone does it. My dad was probably, he had 5 strokes, 3 types of cancer, never mentioned once how he felt, was always fine. He wasn't fine. He was dying.
Dying.
Since I was
dying.
3 years old, he was dying until I was 19, but he never showed any weakness through it. But I saw him get emotional, you know, with myself and my sisters and stuff like this. And that was, in my eyes, that's the toughest guy that I knew.
Why are you so emotional? Sorry to interrupt you, but do you mean he was
just like
crying or just emotional or tearing up?
You'd cry, yeah.
Tear up or cry?
Tear up, yeah.
Right, okay.
So an overspill of emotion. Yeah. So I've always... It's a touchy subject. It's a difficult subject to go onto because I do feel like as a man, it is your responsibility to control, to be logical, and not run away with your emotions into a negative place. However, pressure of life builds upon people. And I do believe that men need to talk about their emotions a bit more. They need to have people around them who they can actually
good
trust
friends.
And won't judge them. Won't be like, people that cry online, I think
it's disgusting. It's actually, it's actually derogatory to people actually in pain.
It is.
It's a form of narcissism. It's disgusting.
So I'm not like one of these people that believes that we should be like that.
No.
But I do believe if you've got, you should have at least 1, 2, 3 people around you as a man that you can go to and they won't judge you if you do cry. However, I don't believe it's something that should be, and it's not crying. It's not the act of crying. It's the fact that I don't think we should encourage people to get to the point where they use it as a crutch or they go to that.
It's almost like a failsafe, isn't it, for some people?
Yeah,
they can get
a little
to that
bit.
Point where it's like it doesn't really mean anything because. It just, they can switch, some people unfortunately can just switch it on. And then it kind of takes all the onus of what that.
Is that crying, right? It's a form of overwhelming emotion, right? And I think like you're saying before, people use it to manipulate. And it's the question that came from my head actually, and we'll ask you again. And be honest with this, by the way, can be honest. You have to say who they are, but when you think of the three people that you can cry around, you're thinking of them right now. Are they male or female? And be honest as well.
Probably female, to be honest.
Yeah, it's interesting. I'm the opposite of it. I'll be male. People.
Oh, really? Yeah.
I was going to say about the crying thing. Something interesting. I think about this quite a lot because, you know, obviously, my mum passed away a year and a half ago. You know, went through a divorce, etc. My best friend died from drugs. It's like sound like a victim. It's just a lot of hard stuff happened.
Yeah.
And the biggest thing for me was, you know. Women in particular will ask you, you know, think it's okay for men to cry. And actually, I would say no. And I sound really bad. There's a reason for it. It's actually nuanced to what you said. So, because there's different types of crying. So if a man cries because, if anything, when a man cares so much about something, that actually makes a man more masculine versus being a blubbering mess. I think blubbering a mess, look, it happens. But do that in front of friends that are close to you or by yourself. I don't think being a blubbering mess, because as a man, you just have to stand up sometimes. I just think you need to sometimes.
Women are more emotional than men, right? Well, usually
they feel emotion differently.
They're a lot freer with their emotions. And I do believe, like, in a relationship, if you've got a woman who is a blubbering mess, that's not then a place for a man to become a blubbering mess. Two blubbering messes, it doesn't get anything done, right? You need somebody who's logical. I'm not saying it has to be a man, but in most cases, women are more emotional.
More men tend to be like, less women tend to be like that. Of course.
Yeah.
Traits.
And I do believe someone has to take the role to be like, okay, this has happened. So we need to be logical about this. I need to calm you down. Whatever thought is in your head that could be wrong, I need to try and change your mind about it or make sure that you know everything's going to be okay.
Yeah.
If you've got two people who are, again, a blubbering mess, that's, you're asking then for just a downward spiral of emotion and into poor mental health.
Yeah, of course.
Like, you know, instability. Like, I would like to say that any time that my girlfriend goes through something and I'll sit there and I'll be like, sometimes I'm too logical. She's like, okay, sometimes you just need to just give me a hug. You don't need to get
explained. Yeah, because women want to be heard and valued rather than actually have a logical,
like an explanation.
Yeah. A solution sometimes. Yeah. Generally, you'll just go, well, you need to do X, Y, and Z. And they're like, I just want you to listen to me, right?
Yeah, yeah. So there's a fine line, but at the same time, I do believe...
Why are you laughing?
Sorry, I just thought of a funny story about that. Sorry, I'll tell it after.
It's a fine line, but I do believe that somebody has to keep a lid on things. It has to be logical.
We're built. This is the other thing we're saying, men and women hating each other. We'll go into in a minute, but men and women are supposed to help each other, right? Our traits are complementary to them. And I think it really upsets me. And I think men and women now who are genuinely do a lot of that thought, say, work on themselves. I don't mean like whatever it may be, right? Thinks about stuff. But it's horrible what's going on, where men and women are supposed to hate each other. It's dreadful, where we're there to help each other out, right?
But men, in most cases, are more logical. Women are more emotional and more caring. If I was lying in a hospital bed, I don't think I'd want any men around me.
No. Yeah, agreed.
Well.
I was hoping I'll get you to give me a little... That's like, and he goes, where's it? He thinks it's the doctor, and it's just his mate coming in looking, that's not the doctor.
But I would want women around me. They are more caring, yes. They're more nurturing, right?
Better at some caregiving roles. Yeah, of course. A really poignant story that came to my head, Toby, when you're talking about, men standing up. There's an example. So when mum passed away and she literally died, and we talk about this quite a lot when your father passed away, because I find it very hard to someone to understand me, a very similar sort of person to me, right? I know that, not sure that's a good thing or a bad thing, but
it's the worst thing anyone's ever said to me.
Oh God, awful, my God. Another one like me, unfortunately. He knows what goes on in my head then. But yeah, what I was saying was when mum passed away, she literally just died that moment. My dad came to hospital, my auntie was there, and being my mum's Japanese, and they're very, very stoic. They don't show any emotion. My mum died. My auntie literally, my dad came in, sorry, crying. Of course, it's his wife, right? My dad's 80 now. You know, it's his whole life is basically gone, right? He's going to find someone else, etc. I was crying and I hugged him. My auntie literally, example, she literally goes, auntie needs to be alone for a second. And she literally went to the toilet and went, I'm not joking, guys, like 2 seconds. Came back out and just went, well, auntie is fine now, and just wiped one tear. But the point is, everyone feels emotion differently. At standing up, I knew, trust me, of course, I was upset, right? My mum's gone. Literally the only person that will love you that much ever again. My mum's the only person that will literally be a serial killer and they'll still love you.
Yeah.
Yeah, right? Not that I'm a serial killer, but... but
that we know of.
That we know of. What I meant was basically, so my I had to be there for my dad in that situation. And as a man, you know, you have to be the toughest person there to make everyone else feel safe. You may be feeling exactly the same emotion, but you're there to make everyone feel safe. Now, my mum's funeral, my dad was reading her eulogy and he started to break down. Of course, he's talking about his wife, dead wife. Mum's coffin was over there. And I remember saying to my dad, I said, Dad, do you want me to read the eulogy? And he said, yeah, yes, please. Read the whole thing. And I know you guys have had this. I think all men have had this. Like, experience where you're not inside your body, you can hear your own voice. And I was reading it out, read the whole thing, and my dad said, thank you. But in that situation, I know I need to be there for my dad and auntie, because we just said there before about the spiraling emotion. If your girlfriend cries, you cry, then you'll end up spiraling out of control. I need to stay strong there to make everyone else feel safe.
Yeah, it is. I think you have a role, right? Or a duty to do that. Again, my stepfather passed away just over 2 years ago now. And actually, me and my sister sat next to his bed for 10 days until he took his last breath. We actually weirdly had quite a good laugh like the whole time. It was quite nice spending that much time together.
You get to know them as an adult rather than just your dad, right?
Yeah,
it's like another man.
Then me and my sister were sitting there as he took his kind of his last breath. And the whole way through it, they're like, it was quite an emotional, 10 days, because we knew like the end of this is, we're going to say goodbye to him and that's going to be it. And I wasn't trying to be stoic or trying to be, it come naturally. I thought she was having a harder time than me. So I just took on that role. You know, I'm trying to be tough.
Not at all. I understand it completely.
It comes naturally, I think, especially when you get to a certain age. My sister's older than me by 6 years and she's always been kind of like that to me. She's always been like the support system for me. And then I sort of felt it in a way like change when she was very vulnerable. And and she even said afterwards to me, she's like, I wouldn't want anybody else to go through this apart from you. She's like, you know, I trust you so much and I feel so like secure safe and stuff around you there. which again, I reflected on it afterwards. I didn't think anything of it at the time. Reflected on it over the last couple of years about it. And I do think when there's a lot of pressure or in a very sort of unfortunate circumstance, you do get to know people who they are and how they react to stress and pressure. And I do believe as a man, as someone who's like, I don't have kids or anything like that, but you have to take on a role of support so someone can lean on you. My sister, I wanted her to get through that in the easiest way possible. I wanted her to know that any problem that she had, I was going to be fine with it.
To have to worry about you.
Yeah, yeah. And it wasn't something that I was like, you know, consciously trying to do. It's just, it just came natural to me. And whether because that was my sister, but I believe as a husband or a father as well, you can't have people around you who depend on you not having full trust that you're going to be, you know, a solid foundation for them.
I think that that's what's lost in men nowadays. And I think that a lot of women is because unless they have a father, quite a stoic masculine father or brothers, women and brothers will understand this. Mm-hmm. It's in our DNA. And that actually feels natural to us. It's not like you're saying this, and people find it hard to understand. You're going, it's not sound tough at all. It's literally embedded within our DNA, those situations. Even a friend, right, to say, even a masculine friend, but then a really difficult situation, you're there to stand up to make them feel okay. Go, it's fine, I've got you, what do you need? That's the way it is. You have to stand up in those situations. And I think, you know, women saying it's okay to cry, I don't think, you know, they mean it in a positive way. I just don't think that's actually helpful for most men.
Yeah, like we said earlier, I think it's okay to express, but I don't think it's okay to completely let down your guard if you have people relying on you. I think you do have a duty.
So of course you do, literally. And I think most men do stand up in the situation because otherwise your family will starve to death.
Yeah.
Not necessarily literally, but that is what we're built in, you know, the wild that would be
evolution,
like.
Right?
Yeah. Evolution, that's what would happen. Mr. M, master of... Mr. Damon over here, he's literally nodding his head, literally, with a small erection in the background. We couldn't see it.
Very, very small.
Yeah, very small. Oh, God, any topics we missed? My God, we've covered so many worldly topics today. We've only got about 10 minutes left. Actually, about 5 minutes left. So, something we spoke about earlier. I was going to call it the green room. There's no green room here. I don't know what podcast I was from. But it was something about women and men, women taking on more masculine traits and men taking on more feminine traits nowadays. And we're talking about the dating pool that a lot of women, you know, friends are spoken to, and they go, I really don't like it when a guy flirts to me. I don't like when a guy approaches me. And I think you'd have to say it was, but talk about the story you're talking about earlier, where a lot of women say they find it hard to meet someone.
Women make themselves very unapproachable to the point where if a guy approaches them in a polite way, hits on them, however you want to call it, it's almost like, oh, like how dare you? How dare you hit on me? You know, I'm up here, like you're a man, like how dare you speak with me? And I feel like deep down, a lot of them want someone nice around them, but they, I don't know what it is as such. Maybe you can explain a bit more, but there seems to be this thing of like not holding men to a high enough value. Women want an old fashioned man who has old fashioned values. And then when they approach a woman in a old fashioned way, it's like, well, you're a creep. So how do you ever expect a man to meet you especially in like the Western world? Like that's how it's done, right?
Yeah. If you ask, remember back. So the way it works, right? Traditionally, and most of them light up again when you say this because it's truth. So you would have studied this, but when women back in the day, you know, they'd drop a handkerchief, wasn't it? And the guard come and pick it up. The woman shows she's available, saying, and you come up and say, like courting, right? The woman smiles. The real way to do it, we know as men, if a girl smiles, you use polite kind of thing, you're allowed to approach. You don't have to be like rude or anything. Go, oh, hi, nice to meet you. I'm Toby, et cetera, et cetera. You chat with them, have a friendly chat. And if it goes well, you go, would you like to go for a coffee sometime, right? Nice and simple. Make her say no, or even lie and say I have a boyfriend. It's not that complicated, but I think what's really, really women don't seem to understand this so much, unless again they have really close male friends or brothers, is every man's had this, no matter how good looking, how much money they have, a woman, never mind go no, but they'll laugh and bring their friends over and belittle you.
Yeah.
And I don't think women really understand what that's like, because look, of course there's bad men out there, But I don't know of any man that do it to women. Say, you know, a girl that wasn't that attractive asked you out, or the kind of gesture to ask you out, no man I know would ever belittle them. And I don't understand why it's acceptable nowadays to, through social media, to belittle men. We don't need men. Because a lot of women out there, guys, would say, we don't need men. And they'll be asked, them in the street, they ask them, do we need men? They go, no, we don't need men. They're idiots. Because they're portrayed as idiots in most TV programs, right? You look at Family Guy, you look at whatever it is, Simpsons, you joke about it, but it's a serious thing. If you look at most sitcoms, the woman's a savior and the man's a blubbering idiot.
Yeah, the man is constantly chasing, right? And getting rejected a lot of the time. But it's not very often in movies or TV shows you see women getting rejected by men. So again, it's portrayed that women are up here and men are not worthy of, if you don't like a guy, you can just politely say, oh, I'm busy, or, you know, even just humor him for a minute. And then there's certain ways to do it. And I think a lot of guys now don't have the confidence to speak to women.
Where are the nice guys? You know, women, a lot of your friends would say, where are the nice guys, right? And I think the nice guys, they've literally asked a girl out a few times and they've just got shut down so badly, they just don't want to do it anymore. Also, as men, like Astrid, I'm sure, similar. If you ask a girl out, you see like a nice looking girl, and you want to ask them out, you feel bad for them to approach. Yeah, exactly. All of us go like, I can't believe you want to leave them alone.
Yeah.
The problem is the guys that are so aggressive and ask everyone out, usually are narcissistic men or have issues. Well, they'll ask a girl out and the girl will say no. And then they'll keep pushing and keep pushing and keep pushing. Yeah, because the guy's a narcissistic guy, has a massive ego. Yeah. A healthy man, we spoke about this earlier, would just go, oh, she doesn't like me. It's fine. I'll move on. It's fine.
Yeah,
but
yeah,
the guys who keep pushing forwards, they're not the men they want to be going out with.
Yeah, yeah.
So I think our time's coming to an end. Yeah, run out. The clock's run out, unfortunately. Toby, thank you so much for coming on. I really, really appreciate it as well. And it was always great chatting with you.
That was awesome. Cool.
But guys, thank you so much for listening.
Building momentum.
Yeah, building momentum, of course.
Thank you, guys. Appreciate it.
Cheers.
Cheers, mate.